care, I don't care. My jokes don't go over, I don't care. Everybody, I don't care, I don't. He does not care, I don't care. I don't care, I don't. He does not care, I don't care. I'm happy-go-lucky, women call me plucky. I don't care, I don't care. He does not care!
Oh, wow, that is very interesting. Please tell me more.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valves, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
From the world-famous Cardiff Electric Network studios in beautiful downtown Bedabbler City, it's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medicine provider who gives me street cred with the wacko alternative medicine assholes. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And my partner in all things, Tacey. Hello, Tacey.
Hello.
And back from sabbatical, it's NP Mel B, everyone.
Hello.
And her daughter, Camembert.
Hello.
Her name's Bree. I'm stupid. This is a show for people who have never listened to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question, you're embarrassed to take your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at DrScottWM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your healthcare provider. Right, very good. Please don't forget stuff.drsteve.com. That's stuff.drsteve.com. Makes a huge difference. You can just go through and click through to Amazon, or you can scroll down and see stuff that we talk about on this show, including the Rode robotic tuner, rode.drsteve.com. You can also see it there, R-O-A-D-I-E. Check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. And patreon.com/weirdmedicine. Doing some different stuff there. Tacey and I were doing a show, and we're going to get back to doing that. I've been putting the live streams up there. And I did an interview with an adult film actress about living after herpes, and I just took the interview and put it up there on Patreon so they heard it before anybody else. So check that out at patreon.com/weirdmedicine. And if you want me to say fluid to your mama, there's two places you can do that now. One is shoutout1.com. It's shoutout with the number 1.com or cameo.com/weirdmedicine. And the thing I like about shoutout is I think, you know, they approached me to sign up. And I think they bagged a celebrity or something because they put us on the front page of their thing. Like, ooh, look who we have. So that was funny. But so check that out. We should reward them at least. But shout out number one, shoutout1.com. I'll put it in the link. And also cameo.com/weirdmedicine. All right. So, Bree, welcome to the show. I was trying to think of multiple soft cheeses that we could call you, on the show. So, but then Camembert is what I came up with. So, what are some other soft cheeses? Let's ask. Alexa. Oh well, it's not soft. It's crumbly and gross. Echo. What are some other soft cheeses other than Brie?
Fontina, Camembert, Coulommiers, Taleggio, Robiola, and Stracchino are soft cheese alternatives to Brie.
Okay, Stracchino.
I think Stracchino is my
Camembert. I couldn't even understand half of those. Yes. I never heard of those.
I think you're Fern.
foreign cheeses.
Yeah, them cheeses aren't from around here.
They're from around here.
Check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. You still rocking with the CBD nasal spray?
Slinging that CBD nasal spray. Oh, yeah.
Right, very good. All right. Well, we've got a lot of questions. Let's go straight into them. And one of them is going to lead directly into Tacy's time of topics because it coincides with it. So let's just do that
go
one.
Tacy.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Uh-oh. Quick question for you.
Oh, God.
Type 3
say that.
Diabetes. Is that also kind of based off of what dementia and Alzheimer's is because of insulin? The way it affects in the brain, or am I just blowing it up my ass? Thank you.
It's Tacy's time of topics, a time for Tacy to discuss topics of the day.
Well,
not to be confused with Topic Time with Harrison Young, which is copyrighted by Harrison Young and Area 58 Public Access. And now, here's Tacy.
Well, now, hello, everyone. So, type 3 diabetes and Alzheimer's disease, what you need to know. I've never heard of type 3 diabetes.
No, nor have I.
Nor have I.
Okay.
I just Googled it.
Well, so let's learn a little bit about it and see if we think this is
legit
bullcrap or not.
Well, the NIH published a paper on this in 2008, and I've still never heard of it.
Well, this comes from Healthline.
Okay.
Type 3 diabetes is a term used by some researchers to describe the theory that insulin resistance and insulin-like growth factor dysfunction in the brain may cause Alzheimer's disease.
Hmm.
So what is type 3 diabetes? Some have suggested that Alzheimer's should be classified as a type of diabetes called type 3. However, type 3 diabetes is not currently an official medical term.
Right.
It is not recognized by national health organizations or the American Diabetes Association. So currently,
this would be a neurologic diagnosis more than it would be an endocrinologic diagnosis.
So
that's
right
why.
Now, you recognize you have type 1, which is when your pancreas doesn't produce enough insulin and your blood sugar levels become too high.
Right.
You have type 2, which is a chronic condition in which your body develops insulin resistance, causing your blood sugar level to become too high. And you have gestational diabetes when you're pregnant. This type 3 diabetes is a term proposed to describe the hypothesis that Alzheimer's disease is caused by a type of insulin resistance, an insulin-like growth factor dysfunction that occurs specifically in the brain.
Wow.
This condition also has been used by some to describe people who have type 2 diabetes and also receive a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. It's highly controversial and not widely accepted by the medical community.
Yeah, to the point where some of us have never heard of it.
Yeah.
But
type 3C diabetes mellitus occurs when the exocrine pancreas glands become damaged and cause damage to the endocrine pancreas glands.
Okay.
Beta, as Scott would say, islet cells in endocrine pancreas tissue secrete insulin. Causes that may lead to type 3 diabetes are chronic pancreatitis, cystic fibrosis, exocrine pancreatic cancer, and previous pancreatic surgery.
What? Really?
Yeah. Researchers have examined a possible link between diabetes and the development of Alzheimer's disease, and that Alzheimer's may be triggered by insulin resistance in your brain.
Hmm.
Over time, untreated diabetes can cause damage to your blood vessels, including vessels in your brain. Many people who have type 2 diabetes don't know that they have the condition, which may delay diagnosis and treatment.
Yeah.
Therefore, those with type 2 diabetes, especially undiagnosed, have a higher risk of this kind of damage.
I'm looking at a study here. It says their pronounced insulin deficiency and resistance develop early in the course of Alzheimer's disease.
Well,
So one thing is that a cause or an effect, though? Are the changes in the neurons from Alzheimer's cause insulin resistance in those cells, or does the insulin resistance cause the Alzheimer's. That's yet to be determined, I think. But go ahead, Dave.
Are they talking about the plaques being?
No. They're talking about actual insulin resistance in cells in the brain.
They're calling it vascular dementia.
Okay. Well, no, vascular dementia is a different thing now. Yeah. That is a different thing. Vascular dementia is when you have decreased blood flow to the brain or, you know, certain sections.
Well, they're saying it can be a warning sign of what will develop into an overlap with Alzheimer's.
Right. Okay. Well, yes, all of those things, they're all dementias. And the final end pathway is you're in a nursing facility thinking you're in a naval ship, which is a Lady Di reference, but...
it's a very sad one. Causes and risk factors for type 3 diabetes. A family history of it, high blood pressure, having overweight or obesity, and depression and PCOS, which puts me right there. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't wait for that to happen.
So when you can't find your keys next time, Tase, it's probably the type 3 diabetes.
So, you know, I could go on with symptoms. I don't know if you want me to in diagnosis.
That's okay. It's just interesting.
I'd never heard of type 3 diabetes before, and especially in regard to Alzheimer's.
I learned stuff actually doing the show because people will call up like Stacy and go, and I'll go, oh, that's bullshit. And I'll go look it up. And it's like, no, that's really real. Yep. So, or at least some people are using it to classify a, you know, phenomena that they're finding in their research. So. And I'm going back as far as 2008 and seeing an article in Journal of Diabetes Science and Technology calling Alzheimer's disease is type 3 diabetes, evidence reviewed. And if you go back in their articles, that starts around 2005 where this was starting to be proposed. So this concept has been around for a while. Hmm. You know, if it turns out to be something like that and you can improve the sensitivity to insulin in the brain with a drug, if you're at risk for Alzheimer's, then preventing it would be amazing. Because I hate Alzheimer's worse than I hate cancer. I mean, cancer will destroy your body, but Alzheimer's destroys the human, you know, the person within.
Right.
It sucks. So anyway, yeah, that's a good one.
Hey, Kush was asking if there's any correlation between Alzheimer's and dementias and insomnia or lack of sleep.
Oh, in lack of sleep, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely, that's what I said too. Yes, that's why it's so important to get sleep for those of us who don't sleep. So
well, I know.
Uh-huh.
For those of us.
One study, there's a study that suggests that sleep deprivation could increase your dementia risk by 20% in middle age. Getting less than 6 hours of sleep per night may increase your dementia risk in the future. So I've got to do better.
Yeah. Oh, you're way past middle age, so you should be okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I go to bed.
I didn't get a bill for that, Tasty. Why not?
Lord and Lady Douchebag. Right.
Lord and Lady Douchebag.
So, no, it's true. Yeah. I really need to do better on that. Because,
yes.
You know, I'm up call screening for Tukey till 1 in the morning, and then I get up at 6. Mm-hmm. So let's see, 6 minus 1. Oh, that's 5 hours. Uh-oh.
Yeah, you're borderlining it there, buddy. Borderline. So
anyway. I was up last night until 4 a.m.
Why?
I was working a puzzle.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Oh, my God.
What time did you get up?
About 9:30.
Oh, gosh. Really, on a weekend, you got like 5.5 hours sleep?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. What kind of puzzle?
Just a jigsaw puzzle. It's a 1,000-piece puzzle. That's how I check out.
But see that?
That is my new stress relief because it's too cold outside to go walk.
Yeah, I need to start walking again.
Me? It's too cold.
Doing things like that helps to prevent dementia, though. So it's your kind of, you know, on the one
I'll
hand.
So prevent dementia by staying up all night because I don't sleep.
Doing puzzles, right?
Mm-hmm.
I finished one jigsaw puzzle, and then I got another 1,000-piece puzzle almost done.
Oh, my goodness.
I have a friend who does those a lot.
Hmm. Well, it does let your brain go into neutral.
Yeah.
I just read to do that. And as soon as I start reading, I get such... so great amount of money's worth for any book that I buy on my Kindle, because if I it'll take me 6 months to get through it because I start reading in bed and I read one or two pages and I'm gone. But if I don't do that, I can just sit there and ruminate about shit that happened during the day. You know, one of my partners pissing me off about this or the other. And but if I start reading, my brain goes into neutral and that flywheel starts to spin. And the next thing I know, I'm asleep.
Yes.
So
I just can't find anything good to read here lately.
Yeah, it depends.
I can't. I've not been able to get into any book. I've tried to start like about five. I've probably read five books since Christmas.
Really?
Yeah. But now I can't.
Well, later. Tell me what you like, and I've got some ideas. But I'm reading the Three Body Problem trilogy right now. It is a Chinese science fiction trilogy, and it's written really differently. It's amazing. He talked a lot about the Cultural Revolution in the first part, and it's incredible. There's stuff that we don't know that went on in that country and how things changed over time. But it's fascinating, but I can't, you know, if I go to the beach, I'll read a little bit more, but that's it. You know, it just takes me forever. If I'm on a plane ride, I'll read.
My favorite are like detective books. I have a mad crush on John Corey.
Did you ever read?
I think that's why I'm single.
Did you ever read Spencer for Hire?
No.
Okay, you got to start those.
Okay.
Those are fantastic. You can read one a day, and they're brilliant. Don't go by the TV show or the movies. No. The books are amazing.
Oh yeah, it's like Harry Bosch. Also, have a huge crush on Harry Bosch.
Oh yeah, I've never watched that show, but I heard the books were good.
Oh, the books are awesome.
All right, well, this is book time with Mel B. Everybody.
So. I want a theme song.
We can work on that.
Oh, I've got a theme song.
We can do it. There you go.
All right. Okie doke. Now, Mel B., you actually brought a story. We might as well do it while we're doing Tacey's time of topics.
Well, it's just something to talk about.
Sure.
So, well,
right. This is a talk show, so that's perfect.
Genius. So one of the things I'm passionate about at work is advanced care planning.
Okay.
And I found something about 15 unique alternatives to burying your body after you die.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So number one, I'm going to skip.
Okay.
Because it's my favorite and that's what I want.
You're going to come back to that one.
I'll come back to that. Okay. We'll circle back.
Okay.
All right. So number two is donate yourself to a body farm.
Sure.
Yeah. So we have talked about that, the body farms where they do research on decomposition of bodies. Mm-hmm. And for forensic purposes, so they'll throw you out there, you know, under a tree, or they'll half bury, or they'll do these things, and then they'll sample tissue over time so that they can. And the purpose of that is to get a better idea how long someone's been there, so they can pinpoint the time of death just based on you know, the rate of decomposition, the kind of bugs that are in there and stuff like that.
Yes, it helps law enforcement with their investigations and decomposition, all those things. They also will train cadaver dogs at these body farms.
Oh, so they can sniff them out?
Yes.
So they'll bury them and then go.
So there's seven in the United States. So
there's one in Tennessee, right?
There is. Yeah, around Knoxville.
Knoxville.
Mm-hmm. The body farm, that's what they call it. Number three is to get buried in a suit made from mushrooms and compost yourself.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Instead of like a suit or your best dress or whatever.
They make suits made out of mushrooms?
Yes, that's what it says.
Well, it does sound like a Scott thing, some hippie bullshit.
It's about $1,500. It's a shroud.
Mm-hmm. So I'm Googling suit of mushrooms.
We're totally putting you in that.
The mushroom death suit.
Oh, no, I have a plan for him.
For me?
I'm
going
to share it with you. There.
For me? Yes. Yeah, I'm going to be shot it out of space, but... let's see. The mushroom death suit will change the way we die.
Yes, it's biodegradable, and you compost yourself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you be made out of, like, magic mushroom death suit?
Possibly. So cost, I'll share that with these things, because I think donating yourself to the body farm is free.
Well, hell, that's a lot
they
cheaper
just say
than
thanks.
Getting
it doesn't cost
a $10,000, you know.
Right. This is crazy, putting yourself on the ground. Hmm. So the mushroom suit is about $1,500.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. Number four is you can get planted and grow into a tree. I want to do this, and then my kids can, you guys can buy a swing.
Trim the tree.
And hang it there, and your grandkids can come and swing on great-grandma's tree.
Dogs can be on it.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was cremated, and he was a horticulturalist. And they poured his ashes on a tree. And then the tree died. It was terrible. It was terrible. I mean, I know.
Oh, Lord, that's terrible.
Your first response is to laugh, but it was horrible. And I'm hoping that they planted another tree there. It's just one of those. It's not that the ashes killed the tree. The tree just, you know, didn't make it.
Right.
So with this, the bio urn, you bury it, and then you put, like, some fertilizer and wood chips, and then the tree on top, and it grows.
Cool.
All right, okay. Number five is to become part of an ocean habitat. Not a bad idea either. I kind of like this one as a backup plan.
Just dump your body in the ocean, and then they'll eat your flesh and organs, and then they'll inhabit your rib cage and bones and stuff.
Well, this talks about you get cremated.
Oh,
and your ashes.
I'm an idiot.
Like around the reef, and it becomes part of the reef.
Oh.
I would think that your ashes would just mix into the water, but
yeah, why not make your ashes into some sort of structure like a brick, and then you could go to a place where they take a bunch of bricks and make an actual structure for things to live in. Mm-hmm. Ooh, let's do that.
Reef pricing to get taken out to a reef is like $3,000 to $7,000.
Well, Captain Mike will do it for us for $400, Tace.
Yes.
That's what I want, is just to be cremated, go to the Atlantic Ocean where we like to go, and dump me in the ocean. And Cap Mike doesn't have to know about it until it's, you know, too late. You just take the urn out there in your purse, and then you get out there on the ocean. And
he'll be like, oh, hey, where's Steve? And I'll be like, right here.
Yeah, well, presumably he will know that I'm no longer with us at that point. Yeah, and then you just dump the urn in. You don't have to dump the ash. I don't give a damn. But, what's he going to do?
He's captain of the boat.
It's his damn boat. He'll
do
whatever
he wants.
Swim back to shore.
All right. Well, I'd probably be respectful to ask him ahead of time.
I think so.
All right.
Oh, all right. Number six.
Okay.
Get cremated at a facility that recycles the unused energy from the cremations.
Right.
And uses it and makes electricity.
No, that's stupid.
I don't like that one.
That wouldn't do
No, they should, be reci- they should be recycling the heat anyway.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Hell yeah.
I'm sure they probably do.
They probably do.
Put a boiler above the crematorium and drive a turbine with it and at least offset some of the electrical power that they're consuming.
There's no cost listed on there for that. All right, number seven is to donate your body to medical education.
Correct.
Which is what the plan is actually to do with me when I die.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. I went to a medical school where the guy that was in charge of the medically donated bodies was actually convicted of selling body parts to people. And what he was doing, it wasn't for something gross, but say you had a plastic surgeon that wanted to get a hand surgery fellowship, he would, lop a hand off and sell it to them for them to practice on. And he also was a funeral director, and it was a bit of a conflict of interest, if you think about it. And then they found that he was burying people on top of other people and stuff like that and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, to save space.
So very respectful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you donate your body to a medical school for anatomic, section, for the anatomy class, mm-hmm. there is a level of disrespect that happens sometimes. Like, I remember one of my most vivid memories of anatomy class is when we got down to the pelvis, you had to hemi-resect the pelvis. In other words, so you had to cut through the taint and then take off one of the legs so that you could see the structures inside, right? And I remember this guy in my class with the cadaver leg over his shoulder and walking with it, you know, like he was carrying a log or something, and then just dumping it in the garbage can. And it seemed somewhat disrespectful. The other thing is that I remember dreaming about being in anatomy class, and all of a sudden my cadaver just sat up and looked at me. That was creepy. And there was another case of some guys that took the arm from their cadaver and they went through a toll booth and held the change out to the toll person.
Are you serious?
Yes, and that was in the news. Those people got kicked out of medical school. It was first year medical school. They're doing a prank. They thought it was hilarious, and they, you know, they lost their career because of that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So there is that, and you're also out of pocket usually for a couple of years. So if that's okay, I mean, now listen, those incidents, things like that, are rare. So it is very important that people still continue to donate their bodies to medical schools. And they've gotten pretty strict about it and saying, listen, cut the shit. We're not going to put up with any bullshit. But still, things like my friend carrying that leg, it still seems to me, it just seemed vaguely disrespectful.
What about your friend who does the cremation?
Yes. Okay. So is that in your thing so that you can donate your body to medical research? That's different than donating your body to education.
Right.
So do you have that on your list? Because we could talk about that.
I think, have just kind of combined both into just medical education programs.
Okay.
But there are companies that will do medical research and different kinds of studies, and then they'll use your body for a period of time. They'll cremate you and return you to your family.
And you get back quicker
and
doing
what
that.
My plan is.
Okay,
to do
okay.
That.
So you're talking about Restore Life USA. Yes.
Yes.
And that's okay. They've been on this show before.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. That what they do is, just as Mel B said, they'll take your body. They, you know, if someone is doing research on knee cartilage, they'll remove the knee cartilage and ship it. Mm-hmm. To them. Do those labs pay for this? Yes, they do. But it's not the same thing as quote unquote selling body parts. I mean, you know up front what they're doing. They might need pancreas cells. And so, you know, that's just to really to cover the cost. These places are not for profit. It covers the cost, it covers the salaries of the people that are doing it and the administrative cost. But that's basically it.
How much does it cost for the person?
Zero.
Family?
$0. I tell my patients about this all the time that
Me
have
too.
Financial hardships that, you know, that's one of their big concerns.
Costs nothing. Worried. You get a free cremation out of it. Mm-hmm. They return your body, you know, cremated within 30 days, minus the little bit that they shipped out.
And that's what you want, correct?
That's what I want, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then take that and then dump that into the ocean or whatever. Do whatever you want. Flush it down the toilet. That would be fine.
It is not you after all.
That's right.
Exactly.
But I, you know, I always told James that runs that place that my last practical joke on him is me laying there on the slab and him having to, you know, cut body parts out of me to order from some lab that needs, you know, whatever. Taint cartilage.
We're looking for some atrophied taint cartilage.
Yeah, right. It's very atrophied.
Very
the more
atrophied,
the better.
Yes.
Anyway, so yeah, cool. What else you got?
All right, number 8 is to fill your body up with plastic, and this is also for science.
Apparently, we're already doing that with our drinking water.
Yes. Yeah. So during this process, the body's water and fats are replaced with plastics. Which means that your body won't decay, and it's totally preserved.
That's horrible.
Well, that's
there's a picture
is that those,
in here. It's not pretty.
Like those
bodies. Yeah.
Yes.
Bodies in motion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I went to one of those.
If you're going to do it as a
display.
And it
was awful. I did not enjoy it.
Yeah. For an educational display, that's one thing. But otherwise, it's like these people who hoard gold. Yeah. You know, when you're in the economy, if you're buying stock, you're helping to employ people and make things more productive. If you just have gold bars, you're just, Midas hoarding your gold, it doesn't really produce anything. This is the same thing as, you know, at least when you die, you can decompose and become part of the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. This is just for people who just can't stand the thought of their body decomposing. And they can't imagine the universe without them in it. Mm. You know, the 13 billion years before you're born never seems to bother anybody. It's always the time after they're here that it bothers them. Yep. But anyway.
The world got along just fine without me.
Yes, for 13.5 billion years.
So there is an institute in Germany that will turn you into plastic.
Okay. Well,
don't know how
much
does
that cost. It didn't say.
It doesn't say.
I bet it's fabulously expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. All right, number 9, and this is my second choice for Dr. Steve.
Okay.
Get turned into a firework.
Oh, yes, I've heard of
this.
Yes,
and you launch yourself into the heavens. We'll have a party, and we'll watch you blow up in the sky.
I'm okay with this
one. Watch it be a dud.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So we'll have a big party. We'll all have a little drink.
Can you like shut up?
Blow Steve into the heavens.
There you go.
I like that one.
Yep. Cost for this. It says $632.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
Let's do it. We can afford
that.
So
there's a company in the UK that does this, that they pack your cremations.
Even better, you could do it off, over the ocean.
I'm thinking. Thinking, save the money, just and take and buy a potato gun. Just cram them in there and just make your
own. The hairspray and the flame. Yeah. That
I used to love potato to do
gun.
That.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be cool. We could just kind of stuff you in a potato and just.
Yes.
That'd be nice.
Which I just learned a new word: cremains. Yeah.
Oh, your cremains.
Yes. Put your cremains into the firework.
Ugh.
So do you have to pay to get cremated first, and then they take your cremains and turn it into a firework?
Right, which is an additional cost. Although I'm wondering if this company just does the whole thing. Like you send your body, they do it all.
Oh, I bet not. I bet you have to be.
You have to.
Not for $600. You're sending them the ashes.
Yeah, probably.
I'm okay with that one.
You're okay with it?
Yeah, sweet. I think that's pretty
cool.
Okay,
this is my top pick for you.
Okay.
Okay. Get your ashes pressed into a playable vinyl record.
Whoa! There's your winner.
And you can get the audio of your choice on the record. It's about $3,800. Also, a UK-based company. And Vinyl-y. That's the name of it.
Vinyl-y? Oh, that's pretty clever, actually.
Yeah, I thought that was cute. Yeah, so you can get cremated, pressed into a vinyl record that plays for 24 minutes.
What
12
the
minutes per side.
Okay. How many?
It would be horrible, horrible music because that's what he listens to.
No, I'll pick the music.
No.
Oh, yeah. Hey, and I think
we'll do King Crimson.
I think King was saying
it's 4 to 6 pounds of ashes. How are they going to put that into a vinyl record?
Yeah, I don't know.
They're going to press the shit out of you.
Ashes following cremation weighs between 4 to 6 pounds, 3.5% of the person's original weight. Huh.
Hmm.
Well, there you go.
It comes packaged with your date of birth and date of death on the cover.
Oh boy.
Yay.
Yeah, that's not. I don't think so.
You can also get it adorned with a portrait.
Man, people go crazy over those albums at estate sales. You wouldn't believe it.
Really?
Oh my God.
Here's the music that I want.
Oh, the music?
Oh no!
For your record of this crap. Yeah.
Oh no! It's terrible.
Picked me up from the airport, and I thought, who is playing that awful music? I get in the car, and it's our car.
There you go.
It was Philip Glass's Akhenaten. It's an opera. It's awesome. She's like, what, who's playing that awful music?
And that's exactly how it's said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. All right, number 11, become a glass sculptor.
Oh, no, this is pretty cool.
You can get, like, made in, they can use your ashes for the glass. And, oh, back up.
And that will last basically forever.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ceramics and glass will last for, you know, eons. Now, what was the one that you were saving for last?
The one that we were saving number for
one.
Last.
What is number one?
Number one.
Yeah, you said you were saving it for last.
Yeah, get made into a diamond.
Oh. Yes. Oh, really?
Yes, you get, can get turned into a diamond, a portion of your ashes, so they don't use the whole, all the pounds.
And they'll compress it. Mm-hmm.
And they'll press it into a diamond. The cost... cool, whopping $25,000.
Oh, shit.
Oh, I was thinking that'd be cool. I could wear it.
Yeah, well, you could.
But I'm not doing
you
that.
You could wear it, you know, on your next pricey. Wedding ring.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I would want to have, I would make two diamonds and give them to my children.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool. But what's the carat size on the diamond? If it's some little, you know, eighth of a carat thing.
Does not say on here what size diamond. But you can pick the cut and the specifications. So
make
I guess
me into
it,
a cubic zirconium. That would be a lot cheaper.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's pretty cool.
I would say that the higher the carat, probably the higher the cost.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I would think so.
Well, if it's relative to your physical size.
Yeah. All right. What's the fluid family have to say about all this, Scott?
All kinds of stuff.
Okay. Nothing that you want to repeat, really.
No.
Okay, all right.
All kinds of goodness.
Fair. All right. Hey, thank you. Did you have anything else on that?
No.
So roll me up and smoke me when I die wasn't on there?
Roll me up, smoke me, not an option. There's a couple other things like getting shot into space, pretty expensive. Yeah.
I like that. I think I like the firework one.
This is just still in the line of being cremated. You can get your head into a keepsake urn, and it like be of your head.
Oh, that's no.
It's like a sculpture.
That's
crazy. It looks like you.
That's not right. Mm-hmm.
No,
thought that was biodegradable balloons that you can let go up into the sky. And get cryogenically
frozen. This bit's ending with a whimper, not with a bang.
Yeah, so, no. The one at the bottom of the list were kind of bad.
Yes, thank you. That was very good.
But you don't have to get buried.
There you go.
I like that. And just being buried, and they put you in this expensive casket that is supposed to, I guess, keep you from decomposing or something, but you know, you just make a mess in there.
Yeah.
So you just turn into
slime.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, I think cremation is.
And then eventually nobody comes and visits you.
Right. And it's just sad and you see these, I mean, have you ever been to one of those places like at Cades Cove where they got the which is a great place to go, by the way, outside
of beautiful
in sort of eastern to middle Tennessee. And they've got old graveyards in there. And, you know, it's people from the 1700s and nobody, I mean, people come to visit them, but it's just for spectacle. Look how old that grave is, you know, and then they're calculating how old these people were when they died and stuff. It's just not, just dump me in the ocean. Forget it. Yeah. All right. Good deal. Thank you.
Good stuff.
All right. You guys want to answer some questions?
Let's do it.
We've got a ton of questions.
Let's do it.
Okay. Sorry, Ronnie B.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
Very good. Correct. Okay. We
hello, ladies.
Nope. Did that one. Let's see. Here we go.
Hey, Dr. Steve. How you doing?
Good.
So a lot of us that have arthritis here and there use... naproxen, which is also goes by the name brand Aleve, as you know. So how bad is the risk for GI bleeding? And now they say it can cause strokes and heart attacks with long-term use or if you take high doses. I don't. I take, you know, one tablet every 12 hours, and it does help. So let me know. Let us all know. Thanks. And I'll look forward to hearing my answer 8 fucking years from now.
There you go.
Touché, my friend.
Give thyself a bell.
There you go. There There you go.
I'm trying to do better. So the ones that come out now, we're trying to get them on first. So we've got a bunch of those to do. But anyway, he's not wrong. Here's the thing. Naproxen is a so-called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. We use it to treat pain and inflammation. It's good for fever. It's good for aches and pains if you've got influenza or COVID-19. It's available over the counter, and but it does not significantly inhibit this system called COX-2, which really is why it, of all the NSAIDs other than aspirin, has a lower risk of cardiovascular events.
Right, right.
So I've switched from ibuprofen myself to naproxen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has similar effectiveness to other NSAIDs and pain relief, but with a lower risk of heart attack, stroke, and other cardiovascular events. They're still working on it now. So the way this works is COX-2s, and there's COX-2s and COX-1s, and some of the early NSAIDs would affect the two equally. And then we came up with these sort of selective versions, and one of those was Vioxx. And Vioxx got taken off the market because there was a significant increase in heart attack and stroke. Mm. And what it is that if they inhibit this prostaglandin, by inhibiting COX-2, it leads to increased clumping of platelets and raises the risk of blood clots and blockage in the arteries. And then COX-2 also plays a role in regulating blood pressure and inhibiting it through a COX-2-specific, say, a non-steroidal-like Vioxx can increase blood pressure, further straining the heart. And then COX-2 also has protective effects on heart function. And completely inhibiting it negatively impacts the heart's ability to handle stress. So naproxen appears to be somewhat more friendly to the heart than the other ones. Although, obviously, don't overdo these things. If you're at high risk for heart disease, talk to your primary care or your cardiologist before you take an NSAID every day.
What about your gut?
Now, on the gut side, all of the NSAIDs can increase the risk of GI bleeding.
Yeah, so, gastritis.
So, Tacy, you want to talk about that? You know quite a bit about this. So talk about how some people are high risk without knowing that they're high risk.
I mean, I really don't want to talk about it.
Okay, you don't have to. Okay, taking on the role of DNP Carissa, you got anything to say? No. Which is fine.
No, I just, I feel like
it's okay.
I used to do that, and I don't feel like I can't speak to it because I don't work for that company anymore.
No, I understand. But one thing that you taught me way back in the day is that people are at high risk if they are taking aspirin, microdose aspirin to prevent heart attacks and stroke, but are also taking a non-steroidal or a steroid.
Yeah.
So they're actually considered high risk because they're taking two non-steroidals or a non-steroidal and a steroid. And those people need to protect their gut through use of a proton pump inhibitor.
Yes. Now,
go ahead.
Do people still take baby aspirins for...
Depends.
I mean, wasn't there something about that, like,
yes,
it's not a thing anymore, or it's more of a thing? I can't remember, but I remember something about baby aspirin and heart issues.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, came out saying that it was not effective and you shouldn't take it, and then they say,
okay.
Then they say, you should take it. And
It was never that it wasn't effective. It was that... certain people were taking it, were having increased hemorrhagic strokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you were helping to prevent heart attack and all this stuff, but at the same time, you're increasing your risk of stroke. So now what they're saying is you should take daily aspirin if you're between 40 and 70 years of age and you're at high risk of cardiovascular disease, but also at low risk for bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So and then you should take it if you have a history of heart attack, stroke, or coronary stent, or coronary artery bypass graft surgery. And this is from JAMA in 2020. Mm-hmm. And but they say you shouldn't take it if you're healthy and over 70 or under 40, or if you're at increased risk of bleeding. So there's stratification of this now.
Sure.
And what they're trying to do is, you know, avoid the people having hemorrhagic strokes because of this while they're trying to prevent a heart attack. But secondary prevention, that's a big deal. And what they mean by that is if you've already had a heart attack, then they are again recommending that you take aspirin under certain conditions, and you've got to talk to your provider about that. Don't just do it on your own. All right?
All right.
Okie doke. Let's see. Let's do this one.
Okay. Out of every question I've ever left for this show over however many years, here's the most important question of all times. Dr. Steve, did you hear where Paul McCartney's Hoffman 4-string bass that was left or stolen over 50 years ago has been found and reunited to him? Can you imagine what the dollar value is?
Oh, we don't have to imagine.
Paul McCartney's first bass guitar in its original case.
Yep.
Discuss among yourselves.
Thank you, sir. So I know, I'll just talk about the circumstance. What happened was all their equipment was in a van, and the guy that was driving the van parked it, and then when he came out, the back door of the van had been pried open, and McCartney's bass was missing. And it was a Hofner, you know, symmetrical bass. That's why he liked it, because he was left-handed, and the basses at the time really weren't made for left-handers. But if you look at it, it's symmetrical like an actual stand-up bass is or a violin. Right. And so he could switch from one side to the other. And it was missing, and they had an idea what happened. They now know exactly what happened and who stole it. Ugh. And the guy stole it, and then he sold it to another guy who owned a pub, and that ended up in this person's attic. And go ahead. You want to tell the rest of the story?
Well, all I know is the rest of the story is they've kind of loosely priced this. It's worth at $12.6 million.
Wow.
$12.6 million.
Wow.
Jeez Louise.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Wow.
And that's got to be one of the most expensive guitars ever priced.
Yeah.
I mean, some of Jerry Garcia's guitars didn't go that high.
Well, no. Well, he's not Paul McCartney.
Oh, he's Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, but he's not Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney.
So where's the bass now? Does Paul McCartney have
it
back?
He has it.
Yeah, they got it back to him.
Well, that's awesome.
It was looked at by the Hofner people, and they said, yes, absolutely, this is the bass. They were able to identify it. And it was just sitting in somebody's attic.
God, that's insane, isn't it?
Can you imagine?
Just sitting in their attic. And I think the grandson is the one that came out and said, hey, we've got this. We have this.
Why can't we find something like that up here in this attic?
Know.
There's enough shit up
there's
here.
There's plenty up here. Okay.
I got some old Star Wars figurines, which Tacey calls dolls. I call them action figures.
A doll.
But, okay, so back to the previous question, I found some updated information. The USPSTF, which is the preventative task force for the United States, now has even newer recommendations for aspirin. And the recommendations are as follows. For adults between 40 and 59 years of age with a 10% or greater 10-year CVD risk. Well, how do you know that? You do that Framingham calculator. So you get just Google Framingham cardiovascular risk calculator. You put your numbers in there and it'll tell you what your risk is. The task force recommends the decision to start aspirin therapy be an individual one. Oh, boy. This recommendation is offered as grade C with moderate certainty of a small benefit. Now, for adults older than 60, task force recommends against starting low-dose aspirin therapy. This recommendation is offered as grade D recommendation, which recommends against using aspirin for this population. So there you go. So I am not taking baby aspirin anymore. I took it for a while when they were recommending it. Mm-hmm. And then they said, don't take it. Then they said, okay, yeah, you can start it back up again. And now the USPSTF is saying, based on the most recent recommendations. But again, talk to your primary care provider about this or your cardiologist. But this was new data on potential risk of aspirin prompted the change in the USPSTF recommendations on daily aspirin use for primary prevention. Now, if you're having a heart attack, I think they're still recommending that you go ahead and chew a couple of aspirin, so you should still have it. I still have some in there if I ever get the, you know, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
So now, a randomized placebo-controlled trial of more than 19,000 adults older than 70 in Australia and the United States found that compared with placebo, enteric-coated aspirin resulted in significantly higher risk of major bleeding. And this is why they've pulled this.
Yep.
So anyway.
I can't take aspirin regularly. I mean, I bleed like crazy. I mean, crazy.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Now, if you have diabetes, they did another study, 15,000 adults with diabetes but didn't have cardiovascular disease, that when the compared with placebo, aspirin, the baby dose, reduced the risk of cardiovascular disease 8.5% versus 9.6%. So it reduced it by 1% it was statistically significant, but it was 1%. But they concluded these benefits were counterbalanced by the increased risk of bleeding, which was also by 1% increase. So they're like, it's not worth it for the 1%. All right?
Hmm.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff.
Very good. Yep. All right. Here's something from our buddy. No, I want to do this one.
Hi, Dr. Steve. This is Kate calling from Philadelphia.
Hello, Kate.
I was just calling because I had alone time with my husband the other day, and when I was climaxing, I got an intense headache in the front of my head that was really unbearable, and it kind of knocked me out of commission for the rest of the night.
Yep.
And I had it through the night and even a dull headache when I woke up the next day. It's kind of made me nervous to try anything in the future.
Yeah.
So
it's a good
from
excuse.
What I read, it might be something with blood pressure going up very quickly, but please let me know what you think.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is a classic sex headache, and they'll just happen out of the blue. Mm-hmm. They'll usually last several minutes. Some can last longer, 2 to 3 days. It's sudden severe headache caused at the moment of orgasm, and many people who have these will experience them in clusters for months or a year, or they may go for another year without having any. Half of all people with sex headaches experience them over the course of about 6 months, and some will only have one attack during their lives. So give him another chance.
Yep.
Have that second orgasm. If it doesn't happen again, you're probably okay. But what I always recommend on these things, when you have a thunderclap headache like that, get it checked the first time.
Right.
And then if they do all the workup and they demonstrate that you don't have an aneurysm, you're not having anything severe going on, your blood pressure is okay, then you can ignore it. Mm-hmm. When I say ignore it, it's hard to ignore, but then you don't have to worry about it so much.
You don't have to panic.
Right.
So family practice physician?
Sure,
or?
That'd be a good place to start. And they may send you to a neurologist. There are some medications that may help with this, including beta blockers and stuff like that. But I'll leave that to your provider. But that would be a real deterrent to having any sort of activity. But she doesn't. You don't know if you only have one data point. You don't know which direction you're going in. So she needs two data points. If it happens again, then it's recurrent. Needs to absolutely be worked up, but she needs to at least let her primary care know that she had a thunderclap headache during sex. Almost universally, these are benign. But, you know, it's not impossible. You could be that one person that this was a herald of something more serious.
So is that the same thing that causes you to get a little lightheaded sometimes when you orgasm?
That's probably from hyperventilation and oxytocin release. You know, there's a hormone.
Blood being drained out of your brain and going to your, you know.
Your nether regions.
Your nether regions.
Yeah, could be that, too. Yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, all right.
I'll look back.
All right, so before we get out of here, Dr. Scott, I want to go through Vaping Dago gifted 50 Weird Medicine Dr. Steve memberships. Wow.
Not that one.
All right. I hit the wrong button. Not really. Thank you, Vaping Dago. That's awesome. So we've got a whole bunch of new members. There is, there's going to be some members-only content. I did a live stream last night that will show up on the members-only thing in a few days. So hope you guys will avail yourselves of that. And also, the Dabblestorian, member for 1 month, says, fluid family. So thank you, Dabblestorian. Anything else you got from the fluid family there, Dr. Scott?
No, just a bunch of gifts from Vaping Dago.
Now you can, so what happens is when he does 50, the system will take 50 people who have signed in and assign those gifts to them, at random, whether they're here or not.
Cool.
So yeah, pretty cool.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for doing that. That's insane.
Thank you.
That's crazy. All right. Okay, Golden George looks like he's got a question down there at the bottom. Do you see that? Can you read that one?
Oh, here we go. Yep. Let me. He must just put it in. Okay, finding info on tinnitus. So finding info on tinnitus is so scammy. Do you know if altitude, Chinooks, or cervical damage is making my tinnitus worse? Or am I just an asshole? Well, that is... not
altitude.
For us to determine.
What's a Chinook?
I don't know what a Chinook is. An altitude may affect it, and certainly cervical damage.
A Chinook is a helicopter. So he must be either riding or a helicopter pilot.
Gotcha.
So I would say it's not the altitude; it's the helicopter itself.
Agreed.
And even unless you've got, which I'm sure they do, have amazing noise canceling headphones. Just being around that noise can affect the hair cells in your inner ear and can cause tinnitus or tinnitus. Mm-hmm. Let's see if altitude itself can cause it, though.
There's nothing I've ever seen that's a guaranteed fix for that either. I mean, you can try 1,000 different things, and some things may help, some things may not.
If your ears are sensitive to changes in elevation or barometric pressure, it can have a big effect on your tinnitus, but it's not, or tinnitus. Do you say tinnitus or tinnitus?
Tinnitus.
Yeah, okay. I always heard it as tinnitus, but yeah, okay. But it could be either way, right? Tinnitus kind of makes more sense, but it's not really inflammation, though.
Tinnitus. Tomato.
Correct. Yeah. Potato, potato. Mm-hmm. Vagina, vagina. Right? Same sort of thing. Anyway, Bree's 18. She can handle this.
She can handle the word vagina.
Right. So anyway, so it looks like it can make it worse, but it doesn't seem to cause it. But loud noises certainly can.
Cervical injuries?
Not so much. Yeah, because the nerve pathway, I can't make a good case for that. Now, if you had a cervical injury that caused decreased blood flow to to that part of the brain, maybe, but that would be a catastrophic injury.
I don't think so.
I think it's the noise that you're running. When we were kids, God, I played in bands, and we'd just crank our amps up, and that stuff can have long lasting effects on your ear, and shooting guns without proper ear protection can also do it. So anyway, see an ear, nose, and throat physician. There are some things that they can do, but you're right. A lot of the stuff on the internet is scammy,
real scammy
when it comes to that. And, some people will hear music because if the tinnitus is of a certain characteristic, the brain will try to interpret it, and they'll just hear music. Mm-hmm. I had a patient that had just heard swing music in their head. Because the brain was trying to interpret it, and it drove them nuts. And we used counter noise for them. Yeah. And there's different kinds of noise. There's brown noise, green noise, pink noise, white noise. There's lots of different. You could try different things. And if the noise keeps you awake at night, having a noise generator that simulates the ocean. It's basically white noise, but that will mask some of that, and it's soothing. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a, I think we have a natural reaction to hearing the ocean because, you know, when we were growing as a species, we had to live close to water. Now we don't have to because we can pipe water to ourselves. But I think that that's hardwired into our our psyche. Yeah. Is, you know, the noise from moving water at a river or moving water in the ocean. Go ahead. Yeah.
We listen to rain at my house.
Do you?
I had two babies that were very close in age, so we had baby monitors in both rooms. Mm-hmm. And playing music for babies is a good thing.
Yeah.
So we did that with the first one.
Yeah.
And then when I had the second one, this one, and she came along, I had two different musics playing in two different baby monitors, and I couldn't sleep.
Oh, right.
So we started we got a sound
machine. You should have synchronized
the
music.
Well, I tried. It just, you
know.
Didn't
work.
No. So we got sound machines and listened to rain, and now none of us can sleep without some kind of noise at night.
I'm not a fan of having a crutch to sleep with. That's because when you don't have the crutch, then it's rough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it's silent, I can't sleep. I'll just lay there all night.
Oh,
but we listen to rain because, yes, the water.
Yeah, rain is awesome. Yeah,
very soothing.
Has something to do with water. Anyway.
Hey, real quick before we get out of here, Cindy, Cindy was asking, do any of us know what kind of surgery Kate Middleton had? I don't. I mean, it's some kind of abdominal.
I don't either. I'm also interested in that.
Well, let's look it up.
It was abdominal surgery. Some kind of abdominal surgery.
Yes. Yeah.
She might have just had.
Maybe she had a tummy tuck.
She's so skinny.
Or gallbladder or hysterectomy.
It just says planned. Oh, it says planned abdominal surgery. So there are several of those things that that could be, right? So you could plan, like Dr. Scott said, a hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. You could plan a gallbladder. Mm-hmm. You can also plan an abdominoplasty. Yeah. But
tummy tuck.
Yep.
She didn't need a tummy tuck. No. She's.
Well, we don't.
I don't know. All that skin from babies.
Maybe she just wears really tight.
She is tiny. Right. She's beautiful.
Yeah.
But they're very private and good for them. Mm-hmm. And but it says planned, so it wasn't emergency. Mm-hmm. Hospital 10 to 14 days. So that
she
doesn't sound like gallbladder.
Like ever.
No, that's not like gallbladder.
I saw that.
Well, they're going to treat them a little bit differently. You know, you and me, they'll just kick out.
Right. But one night, if that, and go home.
Hey, what kind of insurance do you have? Click, click, click. Oh, by the way, we're discharging you today.
Yeah. You know, they tried to send me home the night I had my thyroid surgery.
Oh,
I was like, Lord, no, I might swell up in the middle of the night and need a trach. I'm scared.
It does say it was non-cancerous, but still, you know, you could have a hysterectomy. We don't know. Hysterectomy for dysfunctional uterine bleeding or whatever. So
endometriosis.
How long do
he's going to be king pretty soon, from what I hear. Charles has just gotten diagnosed with some sort of cancer.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And they said it wasn't prostate, but they found it when they were taking his prostate out. So you think bladder?
Oh yeah.
Why would they take his prostate out if it wasn't prostate cancer?
If he had obstruction,
a sizable, obstructive prostate.
If he was having you know, obstructive uropathy from giant, prostate. It could be that. And that it was resistant to medication. Mm-hmm. That'd be the only reason I could think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, there you go.
So
he's probably not going to live as long as his mama.
Well, we don't. Yeah, we don't know. he may upload his brain.
Look at the time, Dr. Steve.
Out of our ass.
He may upload his brain to a computer and live forever. We just don't know. So,
all right, wrap it.
Anyway, we wish him well.
Yeah,
we wish him.
Wrap it up.
All right. Well, thanks always go to Dr. Scott. Thanks to everyone, Tacy, to NP Mel B and her daughter. Soft aromatic cheese. Thanks to everyone who's made this show happen over the years. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel. SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, on demand and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com. For schedules, podcasts, and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking, get off your asses, get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.